ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Yes, I wonder how often you think about your heart health. It's probably in the background there somewhere, isn't it? What's the best strategy to avoid a heart attack? Do you think about it? Maybe not. Today we're going to focus on women's heart health and how many women still do not have sufficient awareness of the risks, and nor do they recognise the symptoms. And fair enough too, because women experience symptoms of heart attack which are quite different from men. The most recent figures in Australia show the size of the problem. For men, coronary heart disease deaths accounted for well over 10,000, 12% of deaths. For women, coronary heart disease was the second leading cause of death, nearly 8% of deaths. So you see, it's a big problem. Joining us for this discussion in this hour, Dr. Nikki Bart. Nikki's a leading research cardiologist currently in Boston as a visiting academic at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. You might remember when she was on with us on the program not so many years ago. She practices as a specialist heart failure and transplant cardiologist at St. Vincent's Hospital, Sydney. She's also a laboratory head at the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute. And I'm pleased to say she's here with us on the program. Nikki, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Hi, Philip. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Well, I also appreciate you getting up early for us in the United States to be part of this discussion. Meet our other two guests too, Rowena Newman. Rowena suffered a near-fatal cardiac arrest in 2020 between the two COVID lockdowns. She was, as she thought, and we can attest, a fit and healthy 47-year-old without any cardiovascular risk factors. She was a runner and exerciser and didn't eat bad food. And she experienced a catastrophic heart event in a home in Sydney's inner west. And she is quite frankly lucky to be here. We'll get the story, full story in a moment. But Rowena, welcome to you. Welcome to Dad Life.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Also with us is Heidi Webb. Heidi went to the hairdresser. Didn't think she was going there to have a cardiac arrest, but... Well, a series of events saw her diagnosed with serious heart disease and needing a serious operation as well. She went back home, not in a car, but in an ambulance, and not home to the hospital. So, Heidi, welcome to you, and we'll get the details of your story too in a moment. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Just come a little bit closer to that microphone for both of you, and everyone will sound tip-top. Nikki, you're in Boston. To you first, researching cardiac genetics. Just first up, women experience heart attacks differently to men, don't they? Do we understand why? Or maybe you should explain how they experience them, and then do we understand why?
Absolutely, Phil. So, you know, when we typically think of kind of the historical symptoms of heart attack, we think of this kind of crushing, you know, almost elephant sitting on your chest, chest pain. And that's actually how men experience the symptoms of heart attack. And women's symptoms are much more subtle. So women may get shortness of breath, fatigue. They're the main symptoms. And because we don't recognize these as more typical symptoms of heart attack, even though they're typical for women, this means that they're under-recognized or women present later. And in addition to this, women are less likely to get the correct diagnosis, less likely to have the right investigations like an angiogram, and then less likely to be on the right treatment. So there's still a really big disparity between men and women in terms of our understanding of their symptoms and then our treatment of those symptoms.
Do we understand why? Is there any difference between men's hearts and women's hearts, for example, as an organ, as a ticker, as a blood pumper? I mean, are they different? Can you tell one from the other?
Well, you can, because women's hearts typically are smaller than men's hearts by virtue of a smaller body size. Mm-hmm. In addition, there are a number of components that affect our heart, including kind of hormones. But there's still a lot to be learned, things like why did women present at different stages, the link between kind of pregnancy and heart disease. the link between high blood pressure in pregnancy, in heart disease. And I think, you know, women were typically excluded from clinical trials that studied heart disease. And even now, most clinical trials only enroll about a quarter of women relative to men. And so this really has to change for us to really understand the differences.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because we're discussing this today, and I was thinking, you know, I don't know whether it's background lazy sexism or whatever, but I mean, you kind of tend to think of heart attacks and heart disease as a kind of male thing, when, of course, it's just patently not. But part of this, as we discussed last time when we spoke, was about how medicine has focused on that male experience. Is it changing at all, Nikki?
Yeah, it's very actively changing. So the different organisations are working very hard to increase our awareness of heart disease. In addition, there's an active process to try and increase the number of female physicians and their awareness of women's heart disease. So at the moment in Australia, about 15% of fully trained cardiologists are women. Mm-hmm. And of them, in terms of interventional cardiologists, so the ones that do the procedures to put in stents, that equates to about 3% of women. And so we're trying to change that so that there are more women physicians to then recognise women's heart disease, but also to increase the number of male physicians that understand and have an awareness of the different symptoms of women's heart disease.
Mm. All right, Rowena, tell me. I haven't been putting this off.
It's a great story.
I know. You were at home.
I was.
And lockdown was on.
Yes, it was in between the two COVID lockdowns in Sydney in November 2020, and I had not felt well the day before when I'd gone to bed, but nothing catastrophic, just feeling fatigued, tired, and I kind of felt like a good night's sleep would sort me out. Mm-hmm. But I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning feeling that something catastrophic was happening. And it didn't feel like an elephant was sitting on my chest. It felt like I had a butterfly in my chest. And I felt...
What, your heart was just going off?
Racing. Yeah, really fluttering, but not necessarily
not
pumping.
Way. Not in a good way. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And I immediately, my brain was telling me that this was a disaster. And I called out to my daughter, who was 11 at the time, in the bedroom next to mine, and asked her if she was awake. She said that she was awake, and I said, great, you need to call me an ambulance right now. And,
did she know how to do that?
Yeah, she did. She did. I'm a single parent, so I had trained my kids into, you know, what to do should anything be required. But not for a long time. It had probably been 5 years since I'd even covered the topic. And so she came in, and she, being an 11-year-old girl, she said to me, "Mum, are you sure? Because this would be really embarrassing if this wasn't serious." And I said, "No, it is serious. Tell them it's something to do with my heart and make sure they come straight away." And so she put the call through the ambulance. People told her to go out onto the street and flag down the ambulance using the mobile phone as a torch. At that stage, she didn't really like being outside or in the dark ever.
I can imagine.
But she did it. And the ambos came in, and while they were there, I had a cardiac arrest. So my heart had been fluttering and not beating properly, and your heart can't sustain that for very long, and so it just stops, basically. When it stopped, my daughter had also rung my mother, and so she was there at the time. She had sent my children downstairs so that they wouldn't, you know, be there in the room. And my heart stopped. They pulled me onto the floor.
That's something you don't remember.
I don't remember. No, I don't remember that part. But they did 8 minutes of CPR and then defibrillated. And then...
8 minutes?
8 minutes, yeah. And
so you'd gone.
I had gone. Mm. I had gone. Yep. Mm. I experienced what it feels like to have that happen. And it wasn't a scary thing, I have to say. It was a very peaceful, you know, it just happened.
I mean, you've got no memory of it, have you?
But I have memory of going into it. So I don't have memory of the CPR, and I don't have memory of the defibrillation, but I have memory of the kind of wave of my heart not working and what that felt like as it all sort of stopped.
Stopped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
Yes. And so.
Anything on the other side?
No, but I always imagined that you'd fight really hard, you know, in that moment.
So and
that,
I.
Yeah. And I didn't feel the need to fight. It was a very peaceful thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Nothing to be afraid of.
You say you didn't feel it, even though they broke your sternum.
They broke my sternum, yes.
Trying to resuscitate you.
That's right, that's right. And they raced me to Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney, and I had two further cardiac arrests
in
the hospital. Yeah.
You really are lucky to be here, aren't you?
Very lucky. The stats that they tell me are that the survival rate for an out of hospital cardiac arrest is less than 5%.
I've been told this by doctors on this program and also ambulance people in this program, which I've repeated to a lot of people. I said everyone watches TV medical shows and thinks that once a defibrillator is in action and people that pump, everyone comes around, everyone survives. They don't, actually.
They don't necessarily, that's right. But I was very lucky that there was a defibrillator available. You know, that absolutely saved my life. And later I learned that had I lived outside of the Sydney metropolitan area, I would not have survived.
You would not have survived.
No. So, you know, there's a real access kind of privilege, I guess, for people who live in metropolitan.
But the thing about you, Romina, was that there was no way you were a candidate in your own mind.
No.
I mean, you were a fit mother. You ran, you exercised regularly, did boot camp twice a week, wasn't it?
Yes.
You ate well, looked after yourself.
Yep, I'd never smoked.
You're slim, you're healthy.
I did all the health checks. I knew that my blood pressure was low. I knew that my cholesterol was not an issue. You know, my body weight was not an issue. You know, everything, all of the markers and risks, the known risks, I felt, you know, didn't apply to me.
To you?
No.
Any family history?
Some kind of cardiovascular, you know, issues, you know, but none that, you know, I felt were reflected in me. So, you know, high blood pressure, but I didn't have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
So I just didn't think it was a concern.
Nikki, when you hear, I mean, you must have heard this many times, I know, but tell me, as a cardiologist, what lessons are there for women in Romina's story?
So first of all, Rowena, thank you for so bravely and so vulnerably sharing your story so that we can all learn from it. I think the first thing to say is that there's a difference between a cardiac arrest and a heart attack. And even though these are both medical emergencies, they're quite different entities. So a cardiac arrest is when you have this kind of abrupt and complete loss of heart function, and that can be due to a serious heart rhythm. And a heart attack is when you have a problem with the blood supply to the heart. Mm-hmm. Now, they're often linked. So if you've got heart problems with the blood supply, this can lead to a cardiac arrest where your heart actually stops. But there are other causes. Rowena, I believe in your case, it was this question of myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart. And that can happen in younger people without traditional heart risk factors. So I think what is remarkable in Rowena's story is, you know, certainly your daughter having the presence of mind to kind of call the ambulance. And we know that if you have urgent kind of CPR and then very quick defibrillation, that makes a difference to your ability to then get into hospital, because your daughter called the ambulance. The ambulance was able to get there in time for you to have your cardiac arrest. And then that you got prompt treatment in hospital meant that you're here to tell your story and also to be able to participate in all sorts of adventures now.
Yeah. Nikki, if in Rowena's case, if your heart stops like this or it fibrillates like this, in the absence of any intervention, how long have you got? Not long.
So part of it is also being able to maintain blood supply to the brain. So, you know, CPR, as soon as someone has a cardiac arrest, is able to maintain blood supply. And there's actually a big difference in terms of getting CPR as a woman compared to a man, and we can discuss that. But, you know, usually you've got less than 3 minutes if you don't get active CPR. But if you've got an intervention like CPR, and then we've got a whole host of different things to keep you alive once you're in hospital, really it's a matter of maintaining blood supply to your brain and the rest of your organs, and then being able to treat whatever the cause of the cardiac arrest is.
Mm. How are you going, Rowena?
I'm going really well. I did just want to add that when I was in ICU, they did find myocarditis, so probably caused by a virus. Mm-hmm. But other investigations revealed that I had cardiovascular disease, so I had coronary artery disease, and I had an 80% blockage in my right coronary artery. So even though I hadn't had a heart attack leading into the cardiac arrest, I was well on the way to a heart attack. So part of the issue was clearly that blockage as well as the inflammation, and I was given a stent. So I now have a stent, and I'm being managed just like anybody would be managed for having coronary artery disease.
The thing is, Nikki, that Rowena's probably thinking, like many women in her situation, I mean, I'm a runner, I'm a boot camper, I'm really active. And if I had all these blockages, I'd be puffing and panting, and I wouldn't be able to walk upstairs. But that's another misunderstanding, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it depends on the degree of blockage when you start to get symptoms. But some of these blockages can happen quite quickly in the presence of risk factors. And I think in Rowena's case, the combination of kind of this myocarditis or the severe inflammation of the heart and the blockage all kind of came to a head. Mm-hmm. And now really aggressive control of all of the risk factors are going to hopefully keep Rowena as well as possible for as long as possible.
Yes, indeed. All right, we are talking about women's heart health tonight. Philip Clark with you. This is Nightlife, 1-300-800-222. You're on ABC Radio right across the country. If you've got an experience of heart disease yourself or questions, with us we have, who you just heard speaking, Dr. Nikki Bart, a leading research cardiologist currently in Boston, but she is the complete bottle on women's heart health and the risks and challenges involved. We've just been hearing from Rowena Newman, who is, as I think we've all acknowledged, quite lucky to be on this earth, having suffered a near-fatal cardiac arrest at home, probably saved by her daughter, who was 11 years old and rang the ambulance in time. Heidi Webb, who's also with us in the studio, just went to the hairdresser. Mm. That's got to be pretty commonplace activity, I would think, Heidi. You're not going to have a heart attack going to the hairdresser. Oh, yes, you are.
Oh, it's a bit of a story, that one. But, it was going to the hairdresser where chemicals were mixed wrongly,
right,
and got pretty severe burns on my scalp,
right,
to the point where I had to get a skin graft.
Uh-huh. So you weren't very happy with the hairdresser,
well,
at this point.
Obviously, no. Yes, yes. The whole, I think for mine is a little bit different to Rowena in the sense that it comes down to, I suppose for me, I've never had any issue at all with my health.
Right.
And it was just an ordinary check with the GP after having the skin graft and having blood pressure done. Never had any issue with blood pressure, but it just happened to be at that time when that they saw an irregular heartbeat. Had an ECG.
So you're getting checked about the skin grafts, and they're giving you a check over. They see an irregular heartbeat.
Yes, that's right. Correct.
And?
Yep. So ECG was done, the doctor's surgery, obviously then straight to hospital by ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out that it was a common thing for me that I didn't really know. And it just so happened that I was at the right place at the right time when it actually happened. It also happened also, and Nikki, you probably explain this a bit better too, when I had my surgery, the same thing happened when I was actually in the surgery.
What surgery did you have?
It was It was like, best way to describe it, and Nikki would be better than describing it than what I am here, but it's basically inserting a like a tube up from your groin up to your heart and burning two sides of your atrial fibrillation, which happens with your regular heartbeat, so that it goes back into rhythm, basically.
Wow. What's this actually called, Nikki?
So for patients with atrial fibrillation, you can do a procedure called an ablation, right, which is where you, as Heidi describes, go through the groin and then burn the area of the atria that's causing the funny heart rhythm.
Okay. I mean, it sounds dreadfully complicated. I'm sure it is. But how's it gone for you?
Oh, wonderful. I didn't really realise the amount of energy I've got back. And of course, it's a bit of a it's sort of like a resetting your heart to a certain extent, pardon the pun, but it's more of a situation where you've got to sort of reassess your life as well. And I do think, and be interested to hear what you're thinking about this too, Nikki, with people that you've worked with too. And the situation of us as mums, we tend to put everything aside and our family does come first. And, you know, I think about when my girls were growing up and for me, having such a motherly instinct, it was all about them and the family first. And I do think that I put myself second for a long time. So now I think to myself that life is not a dress rehearsal. I'm 54. I'm going to the end of the runway, so to speak. You just need to slow down.
Not even by a long way. Not even by a long way.
I do think I was in a pretty stressful job, and I do think that that has a lot to do do with it all. And I think you put it down to how you felt, just like Rowena was saying. You know, going through menopause, you know, all that type of stuff too. And you sort of put it to the side thinking it's always something else.
Nikki, the risk factors for heart disease in women, are they the same as they are for men?
Look, there's a lot that we're learning about risk factors, but there are those and particularly the additional risk factors for women. Mm-hmm. So I think the traditional risk factors, these include things like smoking. And we know that about 11% of women in Australia smoke, not meeting the guidelines for physical activity, and more than half of women in Australia don't meet those guidelines, being overweight, having uncontrolled blood pressure, having high cholesterol. All of those things are risk factors that we can actively address. And then there's the risk factor of genetics. So if you've got a family member that has had a heart attack, particularly a heart attack at a young age, that increases your risk of having a heart attack yourself. We're starting to learn with atrial fibrillation that if you've got a family member that's had atrial fibrillation, particularly a first degree relative like a parent or a sibling, that you're much more likely to have atrial fibrillation. So I think it's really important to understand your risk factors because we can actively address these through diet, lifestyle, and also medications. I also really wanted to touch on the point that Heidi made, and I think this kind of relates to women versus men. Mm-hmm. Women during pregnancy can have signs that suggest that they may have heart disease in the future. So preeclampsia, which is high blood pressure, which can be quite serious during pregnancy. If you have preeclampsia during pregnancy, or if you have gestational diabetes during pregnancy, this can be a marker that within 10 years, you're going to have these problems outside of pregnancy. And, you know, being a new mum, you're focus is on your child, and unless healthcare providers are kind of actively addressing these things in these patients immediately after pregnancy, often this is a kind of missed opportunity to treat heart disease early.
Romina, you suffered a lot of stress, didn't you?
I did, and I didn't realise the cost of that, I guess. So I had, you know, I had a reasonably high pressure job and career, worked full time, single parent, so a lot of stuff on the go. I also had to participate in family court proceedings over a decade, so it was a long time. It's very costly. It puts a lot of pressure on families. And I just thought that you could kind of deal with that and come out the other side, you know, no harm, no foul.
Mm.
But after I had, recovered from my cardiac arrest and I was in hospital, coming to terms with how had this happened to me, I had a few conversations with cardiologists and they all kind of said to me, you did have a risk factor, and that risk factor was stress over a long period of time to a significant degree. And they kind of explained to me, and, you know, I won't do this justice, but somehow stress or the cortisol in your system makes your blood stickier and makes it more likely that you're going to lay down the atherosclerosis that blocks your arteries in your heart.
Wow. All right. I want to talk some more about this. We're talking with Romina Newman, Heidi Webb and Dr. Nikki Bart about women's heart health. I do want to invite some others to the program just to join up in our big national audience. So let's do that.
This is Nightlife with Phil Clark
on ABC Radio.
We're talking about heart attacks and women and women's heart health and strategies to avoid heart disease. Romina Newman, who suffered a serious, near-fatal cardiac arrest, obviously not fatal, she's still with us here and telling her story too in a very brave fashion. Tell me about, you say that stress caused your blood to become sticky. Tell us some more about that.
Well, I imagine that Nikki can tell us a little bit more about it.
I'm sure she will.
Yes, but, I had always thought that, you know, there will be stressful moments in your life, you can't really avoid them, and that really once you get through them, there's nothing remains in your body, so there's no damage done. I've subsequently learned that managing stress is a really important thing. I think in my post-cardiac rehab sort of recovery program, there are psychologists and things involved because it is a thing, so it's an understood thing.
Nikki, tell us about it. What's the story with stress and blood?
Yeah, we're learning more and more about the mind-heart connection. We already know about the mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a condition, and I think I'll start with this. There's a condition called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy. Now, that's a very big word that comes from, it's actually named after a Japanese octopus catcher. And in this condition, the heart actually looks like this octopus catcher. And it's a direct link of stress and heart. So if you have a stressful event, so we see patients that have just been to a funeral or have had really bad news delivered or even stressful good news. So we've seen it with public speaking. You have this direct stress event and then the heart actually starts to fail and it can be very serious and actually lead to potentially even death. And so that's kind of our first connection with the mind and heart. And as we understand more and more, we realize that things like chronic stress, as being described here, that can cause inflammation, which can affect the heart. In addition, the kind of wear and tear that stress causes. And we know that there's a clear link between kind of depression and anxiety and risk of heart disease. So we're learning more and more that this is a risk factor that's not traditionally recognised as a risk factor, but that is emerging as a really important one.
1-300-800-222 is the number. Some calls. Joe in Parkdale in Melbourne. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you going?
Very well, thanks. What's your question?
I'm really, I guess it's more of a comment, and I'm interested to get Nikki's to view on it. I had two heart attacks last year.
Uh-huh.
I was lucky that I was actually in hospital for an unrelated matter at the time. And I had this quite severe chest pain and it was all bells and whistles and they took my troponin levels and yes, they were elevated. I had no other risk factors other than being a menopausal 53-year-old full-time working mum. So yes, I kind of fall into that stressful bunch. And being quite a stoic, resilient person, you sort of get on with things. And I realised I had these chest pains previously. And, after having my blood pressure, cholesterol, having all the different tests done, it was found that you know, my arteries, everything were quite healthy, except for the fact that I was diagnosed with coronary artery spasm or Prince Metal angina.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I was lucky that being at the Alfred and the Women's Heart Clinic there, that this is apparently quite a common type of heart attack that can occur for women, and it's often just passed off as being maybe a panic attack or something. But after a challenge test that I had, it was actually diagnosed that it was my arteries were actually spasming and causing a lack of blood supply to the heart and therefore causing that spasm.
Let's ask Nikki. Nikki, your comment on that?
Yeah, so coronary spasm is a cause of lack of blood supply and is a more common in women and is unrecognised or not recognised as much as it should be. So this is absolutely an entity, and thank you for highlighting it. I think the other interesting things from your story is, you know, postmenopausal women are much more likely to have heart disease, and that's a, you know, the change in our hormones that happens during menopause. It's another kind of period, like in the post-pregnancy period, where we can start to screen women and pick them up early. And also in a really important area for research for us to understand what hormones do and what they do for the heart.
Interesting. What can you do if you're having a heart attack and you're on your own because you live alone? Nikki, anything? Besides calling the ambulance, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Calling an ambulance, calling out for help if there's a next door neighbour. Because as we've discussed earlier in the program, you know, if you end up needing CPR because a heart attack goes on to a cardiac arrest, having people around who are able to perform CPR is super important. So, yeah, early, getting onto the ambulance, getting onto to neighbours or friends as quickly as possible.
Sure. Vicky from Stanhope. Hi, Vic.
G'day, Phil. How are you going?
Pretty good.
Vicky, how are you going?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Okay, so back 5 years ago, my daughter passed away on the 12th of September
mm-hmm.
in 2018. And on the 11th of October 2018, I had a massive cardiac arrest.
That's a month after the funeral of your daughter.
My daughter died, yes. And I was sitting here, and I used to smoke. And I said to my granddaughter, she was 2 o'clock in the morning, I said, Jen, I've got to go to the hospital. I feel unwell.
Yeah.
And I've been unwell since the Monday. And when I went to the doctor's Monday, I thought I just had asthma. And my doctor dismissed the pain in my arm and in my back. And he said, it's not because I was a smoker and bronchial and all that stuff. And I get all that. But anyway, I went to work on the Tuesday and bugged me on the Wednesday, Thursday morning, I'd heart attack. But I'm very blessed to be here. They went to do an angiogram, and I had a dissection of top and bottom arteries. And I was flown to the Alfred Hospital on life support, and I am very blessed to be here. I don't smoke. I woke up not wanting a cigarette, which was very good. And I guess I was just put back here.
Are you off the smokes now, Vicky?
Oh, God, yeah. Look, people say to me, how did you do it? Yeah. I said, I don't know. I just come out of the coma from the Alfred. And when I got back to Bendigo for rehab, I had no idea why I didn't want a cigarette. It just did happen.
Yep.
And I'm very fortunate that now I can't even stand the salmonella of a smoke. And, you know, you walk past the person that's smoking and I hate it. I've got pre-sensing. I have terrific cardiologists in Bendigo, Dr. Nim Nataraja and Dr. Khan. So they looked from Mechuca down to Bendigo, down to Melbourne. I could not have asked for better.
You're getting looked after. Yep. Vicky, thank you for telling us the story. Is the number. V says, Nikki, how long has there been knowledge of high blood pressure in pregnancy and future heart risk? 10 years, 20 years, more?
Yeah, certainly in the last 20 years, where there's the beginning of the emerging signal, and it's something that is being very, very actively researched at the moment. So there's a lot we can learn, and I think a lot of developments that are coming in the pipeline.
Heidi, do you change your life a lot after your heart attack?
I think the biggest thing that I've changed is to slow down.
Oh, yeah.
Slow down, smell the flowers, as my mum would always say. Oh. And
smell the roses.
Roses, flowers.
Some flowers
roses.
Are no good smelling.
Smell the roses. I've also dropped down to 4 days of work,
mm-hmm.
Which gives me a breather.
Uh-huh.
And And just love the outdoors and a lot of walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of walking.
Mindfulness.
Mindfulness, yeah.
Think it helps?
100%.
It's helped you.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like nothing significant changed in my life, but my outlook changed completely.
Yep, absolutely.
And now it's all about trying to spend time with friends, spending time outdoors. You know.
And the other thing with that too is it's not wasted time to do that. And I think that's what I felt before this happened was it's I've got to do this. I've got to get home to do this.
Yeah.
It's not wasted time just to, you know, sit and pat the dog next door. You know, it's just, you know, it's just not. It's really important.
Oh, we'll get to further strategies in a moment too. Nikki, I wanted to ask you about your work too. You're in Boston as a genetic cardiologist. And I mean, there are those who say, you know, our fate is written in the stars, but more importantly, for a medical researcher, our fate's written in our genes. Is it in relation to heart health? Tell me about your work there.
Oh, I love that, fate written in the genes rather than in the stars. Look, I think that we are moving more and more into an era of precision and personalised medicine. So rather than a kind of one-size-fits-all model, we're going to understand an individual as they are. So that's going to be their genetic makeup, but also the things that we've discussed, you know, what's your lifestyle, what's your diet, what's your stress level, all of that. So I'm here working with actually the team that discovered the very first gene to cause a heart problem. They're a kind of superpower husband and wife team, and then a bigger team. And I'm learning about the genetics that contribute to heart muscle disease. So I'm working with a very big database here. And we're already understanding, I had work presented at the American Heart Association last year. We're understanding that our genes, but also sex within the sex differences within those genes, contribute to how we develop heart disease. So with certain genes, women develop heart disease earlier or later. And we've got to understand those on an individual level so that we can then apply them to patients. The other thing that's happening worldwide, but particularly in Boston, is gene editing. So there's been, in the last couple of years, the first couple of trials, one in amyloidosis, where we take a condition that's caused by a single gene, and we can actually use gene editing or gene cutting technology to cut out that disease gene, and that patient goes on to live a healthy life. So it's a fascinating and very fast moving area, and part of my time here is to upskill in those techniques and then to hopefully bring them back to Australia.
Darlene from West Wyalong. Hi, Darlene.
Hello, how are you going?
Pretty good.
I just wanted to highlight the type of heart attack that I had in 2018 when I was 52.
Mm.
I had a SCAD, which is a spontaneous coronary artery dissection, which caused a minor heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And fortunately, I was fine, just hospitalised and had the drugs to get me through. But they tell me that that's a lot stresses. One of the big causes of that type of heart problem as well. And I wondered what your guests had to say.
Nikki, what do you think about that theory? Well, the whole stress theory too, I suppose. Is it something that we actually don't understand that well?
Yeah, so spontaneous coronary artery dissection is a huge cause of heart disease in women. So it accounts for 25% of heart attacks in women under the age of 60, and is one of those other entities that are less recognised. You get less of the right tests and then less of the right treatment, and sometimes the treatment is different to that of a kind of traditional heart attack type treatment. And absolutely, we know that stress contributes to this condition. In addition, more traditional risk factors like diet, smoking, alcohol, blood pressure, and exercise can contribute, and our genes contribute. So there's a couple of genes that have been specifically identified that have a strong association with spontaneous coronary artery dissection. And as for the stress piece in this story, you know, I think that there is going to be more that we learn in terms of the connection, but we do know that those individuals that have higher stress levels are more likely to have spontaneous coronary artery dissection.
A couple of text questions on calcium scores you obtain from CT scans as a guide to whether or not you're likely to have a heart attack. What's the correct way to read these things, Nikki? I mean, you should speak to your specialist, I know, but when you get these numbers, well, what's the best way to think about them?
Yeah, it's really important to put this in context of everything else. And I think that's why having a GP, but also a specialist cardiologist to read things is important. So, you know, if it was my patient, I would take a very thorough history, getting an understanding of the risk factors and also the family history. I would then do a physical examination to look for heart disease and a couple of first tests, such as an electrocardiogram, looking at the electricity of the heart, mm-hmm. And potentially a scan of the heart muscle. And then if I felt it was necessary, I would go on to do a calcium test or a virtual angiogram or both. And that would depend on the individual patient. The alternative is to do an exercise stress test where we actually put you on the treadmill and stress your heart. And then once I got those numbers back, I would put that back into context of the patient and as of the risk factors, and then say, you know, if you have a high calcium score, that actually predicts your 5 to 10 year risk as being quite high. And I would be much more aggressive in terms of diet, lifestyle and medications. But if you have a low score, I don't think that lets you off the hook, because I think there's more we can all do in terms of looking after our bodies and preventing disease in the future.
Mm. Norma from Canberra. Hi, Norma.
Thank you for taking the call.
Pleasure.
I had a mild heart attack about 18 months ago, and I'm doing very well. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to know the effect of severe sleep apnea. I was found to have that about 12 months before, but it was never mentioned in any connection that it might have on the heart.
Nikki, does it have a connection or not?
Yeah, so when you have sleep apnea, you actually kind of stop breathing during the night, and that leads to quick drops in your oxygen levels. And some people can drop really terrifyingly low in their sleep and then recover when they take another deep breath. And these intermittent drops in oxygen levels contribute to chronic high blood pressure. And that's very clearly documented. And then that high blood pressure increases your risk of having a heart attack. In addition, having sleep apnea, you're much more likely to have sleep apnea if you're overweight or obese. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another risk factor for heart disease.
Yeah, indeed. All right. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Joy from Dalesford. G'day, Joy.
Oh, good evening. Thank you for the programming. 2 years ago, when I was having a colonoscopy, the specialist, the anaesthetist, found that I had AF, and I'm perfectly healthy and not overweight and whatnot, and was caused by stress in my job. And I'm wondering what I should be doing now as a result. Like, I went to the cardiologist and so on, and he said to give up the blood thinners. That was late 2022.
Give up the what thinners, sorry?
The blood thinners.
Oh, blood thinners. I thought you said blood dinners. I was thinking, Joy, what particular cult have we come across here in Dalesford, Joy, where you're having blood dinners? Anyway, go on. Yes.
But I was just wondering what I should be doing now to stay healthy.
Mm. Nikki?
Yeah, so Heidi's also spoken to us about atrial fibrillation today, so it's good that you kind of reiterate that as a cardiac symptom. I think it would be really important if I was your cardiologist to kind of have a really good chat and understanding of, again, your risk factors, your lifestyle, your current medications. But as kind of general advice, you know, with atrial fibrillation, getting on top of all the traditional risk factors and also diet, lifestyle, medications. So, you know, making sure that you have a kind of heart healthy diet, actively engaging in vigorous exercise. And I would advocate vigorous exercise outdoors, managing your stress levels, and then being on the appropriate medication for atrial fibrillation. And if those things don't work, considering kind of advanced techniques for atrial fibrillation.
Right. Okay. The role of cholesterol and your view on, I mean, there's a view among some people that, you know, that you, basically everyone should be on statins. What do you think, Nikki?
Yeah, again, this comes back to the individual patient. So I would want to know, you know, the guidelines say that once we take someone's cholesterol level, if it is high, again, in context, so if they haven't had a heart attack before, then you would want to give that patient 3 months of aggressive diet and lifestyle before you start a medication. And the reason for that is that, you know, there's a diet and lifestyle can change our risk factors, not just for heart disease, but for stroke and for kind of general health. Yeah. And so implementing something that's sustainable and that's long term can be hugely beneficial. And something like getting a high blood cholesterol recording can be a bit of a wake-up call to say, okay, now I've got to address all these other things in my life. And just starting a medication may not provide that opportunity to address those things.
I get that.
That's with the caveat that after 3 months, if cholesterol is still high, you don't want to allow someone to have kind of uncontrolled high cholesterol because we know it can lead to heart disease. And then medication may play a role.
Hmm. Okay, look, this hour has disappeared on us. Heidi's changed her life. So has Rowena. Both of them say they're more mindful about the way they live, and they've talked about that. Summarising the strategies, Nikki, for women to look after their hearts and heart health, can you run through them in a concise way?
Yep. So I think control the things we can control. Mm-hmm. So that means lowering blood pressure, lowering cholesterol, stopping smoking today, minimizing alcohol intake, losing weight in a sustainable way, and having a heart healthy diet. And then understanding and mitigating the things we can't control. So that's our genes. So understanding what our risk factors are according to our family history, and then really addressing lifestyle. So looking at stress and working on minimizing it wherever possible, looking at sleep and looking at improving it wherever possible, and addressing community and loneliness. So linking in with groups that, you know, enable us to live that kind of healthy life, body, mind and spirit.
Mm. Yes, everyone talks about this. I mean, it's at the forefront of thinking, isn't it? Rowena and Heidi, don't laugh because I'm coming to you in a second. But Nikki, you're an experienced mountaineer, amongst other things, in your life. You've overachieved in all sorts of aspects of your life, and well done to you. More power to your arm as a mountain climber, I suppose. You're going to need that.
As a woman.
But that kind of exercise, I mean the role of exercise, and it doesn't have to be what you do, but it's very important, isn't it? And exercise is not just walking around the block, is it, Nikki, or not?
Yeah, look, I believe you have to practice what you preach. So I'm a big advocate for exercise. I think that exercise, particularly just the humble walk, if you're walking at a moderate level of intensity, that is a magic pill. You know, we know that moderate exercise reduces weight, reduces cholesterol, reduces blood pressure, addresses depression. And if you do it with a friend or outside, also increases community and makes us feel connected. And so, you know, I think it is absolutely the magic pill.
Yeah. Heidi, what are you doing in terms of exercise?
Wow, we're doing the coast trek, aren't we, love?
We're doing the coast trek.
Yay!
Now, the coast trek is a fundraiser, which is a fantastic thing, but it's a long walk, isn't it? Yeah.
Rowena,
tell me about that.
Hers is longer than mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are different distances you can do. So there's 20, 30 and 50 kilometres. Yeah. Yes, I've bitten off the 50 kilometres to really motivate myself through fear to get out there and keep walking and walking. So, yeah, look, it's a great fundraiser. It's for the Heart Foundation, which is obviously a cause very close to my heart, excuse the pun. Yeah. And it's a great way to get out with your friends. It's teams of four. So it's walking with, you know, friends.
And people can find talking. Out, people can find out more if they go to all the W's, coasttrek.com.au, coasttrek.com.au. Mary in Hobart says, is it better for your heart to sleep on your left side or your right? Yes or no? Nikki, we nearly ran out of time.
Jury's out. No.
No. Look, all right. It's been terrific to talk with you. Dr. Nikki Bart, Heidi Webb and Rowena Newman, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.